Now, the Saturday Morning Update.
105.9 FM. Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. It's good to have you along. Luke Grooms behind the console this morning. Jane Houtman is our producer. And plenty to cover. News made last night on Capitol Hill as finally legislation passed, the $3 trillion stimulus package, and we'll get into the details of that in just a second. But I want to let you know that we have got a stellar lineup once again this morning. We will be joined by KT McFarland, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and with both KT and Tony, we're going to get into the whole topic of unmasking, the Flynn investigation, the improprieties in that investigation, and we'll get the rundown from KT and Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer on that. We'll talk with John Gizzi later on this morning. He was at the White House. There were three different events hosted by President Trump yesterday, plus a press briefing from the new press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany. So we'll talk with John Gizzi coming up in the 7 o'clock hour about the latest there. Also, this week, there were two midterm elections, just replacement elections, no big deal, except for the fact that Republicans won in Wisconsin and in California. You probably didn't hear about that, because they were Republicans that won. But we'll get into that with John Gizzi. And could be an interesting sign in Wisconsin with that victory in Wisconsin for a Republican candidate there, replacing Sean Duffy's seat. NASCAR is back. First major sport to come back. They will be racing in Darlington, South Carolina tomorrow in the afternoon. About a 4 o'clock race, the Darlington 400. And there will be no spectators, and the fans will be watching on television. Nobody in the seats, but they will run NASCAR. And funny thing, the announcers for Fox Sports will not be in Darlington, South Carolina. They will be in Charlotte, North Carolina. That's a little overkill on social distancing, but that's kind of up to you. Also this morning, we're going to be talking with Jim Trusty. He's an attorney at the IFRA law firm, and he's got some perspectives on the move by Judge Sullivan. You may have seen that the Justice Department was ready to just terminate the prosecution and no longer pursue the prosecution of General Flynn, but the judge, Emmett Sullivan, said not so fast, and he's appointed another judge to look into it. We'll talk with Jim Trusty about that and get the rundown. Jennifer Harper, of course, is at the Washington Times, and she's got some interesting poll numbers on what's going on out there and how the American people are feeling about what's going on in politics, and also some campaign finance numbers, which I think you'll find interesting. So plenty to cover on the Saturday Morning Update today. Now, first off, last night, House Democrats approved a mammoth $3 trillion relief package. It's designed to alleviate the health and economic fallout of the coronavirus pandemic. However, it now has to go to the Senate, and the predictions are that it's dead on arrival in the Senate. Now, last night's vote, 208 to 199. Now, it's interesting, you know, I look at the Hill.com, I look at Politico, I look at the, you know, mainstream media coverage. It was real hard to find out how many votes the Democrats lodged against it. So, in other words, the final vote, 208 to 199, there were 12 Democrats that voted against it. But I had to, you know, look on another site that just does votes. Because, you know, it's not something that the normal media outlets want to put out when the Democrats have 12 dissenters. They did point out in the article, though, that one Republican dissenter, Representative Peter King, did defect from the GOP, and he voted yes. But interesting, 208 to 199. So that was a close vote. And they do say that a mix of progressive and centrist Democrats broke away from party leaders. So Nancy Pelosi characterizing the legislation as an opening salvo. Of course, the legislation was crafted by Democrats without consulting Republicans. Here's how Nancy Pelosi laid it out earlier in the week.
We're open to negotiation, and so when people say partisan, it's like, wait a minute, it wasn't partisan when they did it. Did you say that? And we're saying, okay, here's our offer. Let's see where you are.
All right. Well, that's her offer. How does Mitch McConnell feel about it?
It's an 1,800-page liberal wish list. It strikes me as hardly salvageable. It's a parade of absurdities that can hardly be taken seriously.
And, of course, Democrats have been on the attack against Mitch McConnell, and they'll see, you know, eventually get something together on it and come up with a solution. But for the moment, the House legislation is passed, but again, not much expectation as to it moving quickly through the Senate. Interesting, too, a vote yesterday in the House of Representatives, and for the first time in the history of the House of Representatives, the Democrats have approved rule changes that will allow members to vote by proxy and to hold hearings remotely during the coronavirus pandemic. Now, this legislation's been debated for weeks. House Democrats installing the new rules on a largely party-line vote. This time it was 217 to 189. Those votes over Republican arguments that the move bucks the chamber's institutional history and sets a dangerous precedent. As of now, a member can vote on behalf of 10 others who can't travel to Washington. Committees can also hold hearings and markups through video conference, but they can only hold informal briefings remotely. So we'll see what that means in the actions in the House moving forward. But again, the House of Representatives voting for the first time in history to approve a rules change that will allow members to vote by proxy and hold hearings remotely. It's 6:14. It's time for a check of the traffic and weather, and Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Virginia, the earlier accident on northbound 95 at the Fairfax County Parkway now moved to the left shoulder. Just a brief delay there. Keep in mind in the district that Howard Road in southeast is closed between the Anacostia Freeway and the Suitland Parkway for weekend road work, but detours will be posted. And also keep in mind that the ramp from 295 northbound to go on to the Suitland Parkway is closed for the long-term work zone. Now also keep in mind in Beelsville that there are weekend closures of the Route 28 bridge over the Monocacy River throughout the weekend. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
All right, first one. Sunny to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday, highs around 80 degrees, chance for a stray storm south and west of D.C. Tonight, cloudy skies, lows in the 50s to near 60 degrees. For your Sunday, mostly cloudy, a few stray showers, highs in the lower 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
69 degrees at 6:15 on the Saturday morning update. I'm Richard. It's great to have you along on the Saturday morning update. And a lot of activity at the White House yesterday. Space Force event, there was a Heroes event, and there was the launch of Operation Warp Speed and the announcement of the two men to lead it. And this, of course, is the effort of the White House and the federal government to move as quickly as possible on vaccines. And we have three clips from President Trump, and I thought we'd play the first one because this is basically laying out what the Operation Warp Speed program is all about.
Today I want to update you on the next stage of this momentous medical initiative. It's called Operation Warp Speed. That means big and it means fast. A massive scientific, industrial, and logistical endeavor unlike anything our country has seen since the Manhattan Project. To date, Operation Warp Speed has brought together all of the experts across the federal government from places like the NIH, CDC, FDA, and many other agencies. This historic partnership will now bring together the full resources of the Department of Health and Human Services with the Department of Defense. And we know what that means. That means the full power and strength of the military, and that really talking about the logistics. If we get it, when we get it, That means the logistics, getting it out so that everybody can take it.
Lead faces of the task force when it comes to the medical community. In this case, though, it's a little different direction. They're going more with a scientist for leadership, and then the military will be very much involved in the implementation of the vaccine program. And President Trump yesterday introduced the leaders of Operation Warp Speed.
And today we're proud to announce the addition of two of the most highly respected skilled professionals in our country. Worldwide respected. Operation Warp Speed's chief scientist will be Dr. Moncef Slowey, a world-renowned immunologist who helped create 14 new vaccines. That's a lot of our new vaccines. In 10 years during his time in the private sector, one of the most respected men in the world in the production and really on the formulation of vaccines. Joining Dr. Slowey as chief operating officer will be General Gus Perna, a four-star general who currently oversees 190,000 service members, civilians, and contractors as commander of the U.S. Army Material Command. That means logistics. That means getting it out. We got to get it out there. Really highly respected people.
So that's the president introducing the team, and he went on to explain a little further detail on exactly what Operation Warp Speed would be doing.
Under Operation Warp Speed, the federal government will invest in manufacturing all of the top vaccine candidates before they're approved. So we're knowing exactly what we're doing before they're approved. That means they better come up with a good vaccine because we're ready to deliver it.
And the president did have, this was a clip that a lot of people had been playing yesterday about moving forward with or without a vaccine. And this was the final quote we have from the president yesterday.
Vaccine or no vaccine, we're back and we're starting the process.
So that's President Trump, Operation Warp Speed yesterday. Again, as I mentioned, there were two other events and a press conference with Kayleigh McEnany, the new press secretary at the White House. John Gizzi was there at the White House yesterday, and we'll talk with John coming up in the next hour and get his rundown on exactly what happened, how it went, and kind of the reaction that people are having to Kayleigh McEnany. So that's an interesting conversation we'll have with John Gizzi later on in the program. Interesting poll number this week on President Trump's approval rating. And this is a CNN poll. It was released on Tuesday. The president's approval rating tied with his record high. The poll showed that 45% of Americans approve of Trump's job performance as president. It tied his all-time record high rating, which was first set in March of 2017. 42% of Americans approving of the president's handling of the coronavirus, while 55% disapproving. A majority of Republicans, 71%, believe that the worst of the virus is behind us, while 74% of Democrats believe the worst is yet to come. So look at the poll numbers. It's 6:21. We'll take a quick break and then back on the Saturday Morning Update.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
We've had our lives flipped upside down recently, and for many of us, things just got a lot rougher. But we've faced tough times before, and we're going to pull through this because, well, that's what we do in America. At Term Provider, Big Lou has a message for you. If all this craziness has you protecting the ones you care about, don't let it stop when we get through this. Keep the protection rolling with a life insurance shield around your family. For over 30 years, Term Provider has been providing affordable term life insurance at better prices and with better service, including policies that don't need an in-home exam. As for Big Lou, He's just like you, spending time at home with his kids, too. No matter what your medical history, prostate cancer, heart conditions, high cholesterol, or if you're taking prescription medications, at Term Provider, we can help you find $1 million or more of term life insurance at affordable rates to fit your budget. There's no obligation, so call now for your free quote. Call 800-568-2790. That's 800-568-2790. 800-568-2790.
Hey, it's Larry O'Connor. Since we're spending more time at home these days, perhaps you're finding some things about your home you don't really enjoy. Well, David Foster and his team at Foster Remodeling Solutions can work with you to solve those problems and turn your house into a home you'll truly love. Now more than ever, Foster Remodeling Solution understands the health and safety for you, your family, and their employees take top priority. So they're happy to discuss with you over the phone or with a video chat your home renovation goals to get the initial renovation process started. It's as easy as snapping some cell phone pictures of the area you want to be renovated. Whether it be a new gourmet kitchen, a luxurious bathroom, an in-law suite to care for loved ones, or an entire redesign of your home to age in place, Foster Remodeling Solutions is ready to help, and their craftsmanship is truly amazing. Call the company I recommend, Foster Remodeling Solutions. Start the process right now while you're home. 703-745-1110. 703-745-1110, or visit fosterremodeling.com. Foster Remodeling Solutions. Their process makes it perfect.
It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. It is springtime, and for the past couple of weeks, we've been joined by Natalie Carmoli. She is a public relations specialist at Proven Winners, and you know the Proven Winners plants when you go to the local independent garden center, the real nice ones in the white buckets. Natalie, thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me back, Rick. I'm glad to be here.
Finally, some warm temperatures here in the mid-Atlantic. So roses are something that are very special to people, but in, you know, my past experience, they're a little bit tricky to grow, and you know, maybe you're lucky for a couple of weeks and then you start having problems. What would you say the secret to success is?
Good question. Roses can be tricky, but there's really only two things you need for an amazing rose display. First, roses love sun. So plant them in a spot that gets at least 6 hours of sun a day. Second, try shrub roses. They're so much easier to care for than hybrid tea roses. Proven Winners has a line of easy to grow roses, appropriately called Oh So Easy, and they're going to make you look like a gardening pro. These roses aren't even introduced to the market until they've been trialed and tested to ensure that they're exceptionally disease resistant. So you can be sure they're going to hold on to their foliage and they're going to be covered in colorful flowers all summer.
So to be exact, shrub roses are the ones you want to look for, not necessarily the hybrid tea rose.
Yes.
So you mentioned the Oh So Easy line of roses. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, I wanted to actually talk today about one specific member of our Oh So Easy line of shrub roses, and it's called Oh So Easy Double Pink Rose. This is a brand new rose that was just introduced to garden centers last year, but I think you're going to be seeing a lot of it, and not just because it's beautiful, but it's also just earned some pretty important awards. First, it's been given the 2021 Award of Excellence by the American Rose Society. And it's also been given two local artist awards by the American Rose Trials for Sustainability. What this tells us is this rose was trialed alongside a group of other outstanding rose cultivars for 2 to 3 years, and it came out on top.
Well, the top award from the American Rose Society is pretty impressive. And the trials sound like they're pretty detailed. Tell us a little bit more about them.
They are detailed, and they are pretty sophisticated, but in a nutshell, these roses are sent to multiple test gardens across the nation, and they're rated several times a year by experienced rosarians. So these people know how to grade roses, and they know what they're looking for. And they look for things like pest resistance and drought tolerance. And these roses need to prove that they're going to be low maintenance, vigorous, and they're going to grow beautifully in each region across the nation. And Oh So Easy Double Pink Rose did just that. It performed like the champ that it is. But this isn't the only award winner in the Oh So Easy line of roses. It also joins Oh So Easy Paprika, which is a beautiful, light, orangey, yellow colored rose. There's also Oh So Easy Urban Legend, which is a bright red rose with a nice bright yellow center, and Oh So Easy Petite Pink, a beautiful, soft, low-mounting pink rose. All of these roses have been multiple award winners in rose trials. So what it really comes down to is you can't go wrong when you choose a rose in the Oh So Easy line. They're all going to grow beautifully for you, and they're all going to grow like a winner.
So how does this translate to the home gardener? I mean, these are professionals doing trials, but if you're a home gardener, you know, you may not have the time to devote and the attention to devote to it. So how does that translate for us?
That's also a great question. What it means for the home gardener is they're not just growing an award-winning rose, which they will be, but they're growing a rose that's been proved to give them seasons of easy care color with very little effort on their part. Now, like all Oh So Easy roses, Double Pink is going to be especially disease-resistant, but it really shines with piles of true pink blooms with bright yellow centers. And I'm not kidding when I say piles of flowers. This rose has up to 10 flowers per stem, and it blooms continuously from spring to frost. It's a good size. It gets to be about 1.5 to 2 feet tall, so it's going to fit neatly into most gardens. And best of all, it's really hardy, down to USDA Zone 5.
So our listening area ranges from Zone 6 to Zone 7. So if you're safe down between 5 and 9, then we're right in the sweet spot.
Absolutely. This rose is going to be perfect for gardeners in your area.
Now, you're talking about some very specific breeds. Where do we find these different types? And obviously, you know, you don't want to accept a substitute.
That's right. Well, we hope you're going to support your local garden center when you're shopping for plants and garden supplies this spring. And it's easy to find them. All you have to do is ask for Oh So Easy Roses in the Proven Winners white container. You can also find details about all 10 roses in the Oh So Easy line at provenwinners-shrubs.com.
Natalie Carmoli at Proven Winners, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
6:29, it's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We've got the news coming up next, and then we'll be talking with Jennifer Harper. And she has some very interesting perspectives on the presidential campaign, what's going on with the Biden campaign, President Trump, and how about those Bernie Sanders supporters? That's all coming up.
During the current emergency, Cabinet Discounters can still assist you with your remodeling projects using remote consultation. It's easy to get your kitchen or bath remodeling project started right now. Log in to CabinetDiscounters.com and fill out the consultation request form. An experienced designer will contact you by phone or email to begin your remote consultation. Cabinet Discounters wants you to remain safe without having to put your entire life on hold. That's why we created remote consultation, to get things started right away. When things get back to normal, your remodeling project can hit the ground running. You can get your kitchen or bath remodeling project started right now with remote consultation at CabinetDiscounters.com.
Check it out at CabinetDiscounters.com. That's CabinetDiscounters.com.
It's 6:30 on WMAL. In a check of the news, Democrats have powered a massive $3 trillion coronavirus response bill through the House of Representatives over Republican opposition. 1,815-page measure aimed at propping up a U.S. economy in a free fall and a healthcare system overwhelmed by the pandemic that's still affecting certain areas of the country. It's also an election year statement of priorities by the Democrats. The measure has literally no chance of passing the GOP-controlled Senate, has already drawn a White House veto threat. President Trump has fired the State Department's Inspector General, an Obama administration appointee. His office was critical of alleged political bias in the agency's management. The ouster is the latest in a series of moves against independent executive branch watchdogs who have found fault with the Trump administration. A senior department official says the president removed Steve Linick from his job yesterday, but gave no reason for the removal. In a letter to Congress, Trump said Linick no longer had his full confidence. The U.S. government is imposing new restrictions on Chinese tech giant Huawei by limiting its ability to use American technology to produce semiconductors abroad. The Commerce Department said yesterday the move aims to prevent Huawei from making a run around existing U.S. sanctions. The U.S. government blacklisted the Chinese tech company a year ago, deeming it a national security risk. Numerous loopholes exist. China reacting angrily. 6:32, time for a check of the traffic and weather, and Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
So far, traffic is moving well on the Beltway this morning in Maryland and Virginia. In Maryland, on the inner loop between University Boulevard and New Hampshire Avenue, look for some road work in the right lane. Also, do keep in mind there is road work on Georgia Avenue northbound between Norbeck Road and the ICC. That takes away the right lane and the right shoulder. So far, that not causing any delays. And in the district, do keep in mind a portion of Howard Road closed for weekend road work between the Anacostia Freeway and the Suitland Parkway. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
We'll have added clouds on your Saturday. Also the chance for a couple of isolated storms south and west of D.C. High steady around 80 degrees. As we head overnight, cloudy skies. Lows a little bit cooler in the 50s in the suburbs, near 60 degrees downtown. For your Sunday, mostly cloudy skies, a few stray showers, highs in the lower 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
69 degrees at 6:33 on the Saturday morning update. It is the Saturday morning update. It's great to have you with us. And Jennifer Harper writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. She is nice enough to join us every Saturday. Good morning.
Well, good morning. I like being nice or something like that, but it's always good to be with you and all of the listeners.
Well, thank you. We talked last week about Bernie Sanders supporters and kind of the question mark as to how they would feel about Joe Biden. And a top advisor to Senator Sanders said on Friday in a memo that former Vice President Joe Biden could lose the election in November because, quote, a significant portion of Sanders supporters are currently unsupportive and unenthusiastic about his candidacy. And I know you're looking at the enthusiasm factor in the campaign this week.
Yeah, you're 100% right about those young Bernie voters. I mean, they're definitely not ready to give up on Bernie. In fact, they just won't even look at Biden, but that's another poll and another day. But I do have some interesting numbers here about voter enthusiasm, and certainly that's a factor in an election like this. And gosh, let's just guess who is more enthusiastic right now. This is a Politico and Morning Consult poll, about 2,000 registered U.S. voters. It was conducted May 8th through 10th, so it's very, very current. Anyway, they reveal that 58% of all voters say that they are extremely or very enthusiastic about voting in the presidential and state elections this year. So let's look at the rest of them. Well, 70% of Republicans agree with that, along with 40% of independents and 60% of Democrats, lagging behind a little bit. 19% overall say they are somewhat enthusiastic. That includes 17% of Republicans, 22% of independents, and 18% of Democrats. And 12% are not too enthusiastic about voting. That includes 9% of Republicans, 19% of independents, and 10% of Democrats agree with that. And finally, 11% are not at all enthusiastic. And that includes 4% of Republicans. And let's just skip over to the Democrats, and 11% of Democrats. And the takeaway message here is that every vote's going to count this time, but it kind of looks like the Republicans have the edge. It's not a gigantic one, but it's pretty significant. And when the time comes, we shall see.
So that's what the poll numbers are showing. But, you know, in politics, it's also all about how's the money going on the campaigns?
Well, let's just say that President Trump has a bodacious war chest, meaning his donations. And he's definitely winning the donations war at the moment. And the Republican National Committee came out with the figures for how much money he has raised. And in the month of April alone, President Trump brought in $61.7 million. Okay? And the total haul for this election cycle is an unprecedented $742 million.
Wow.
And they point out, yes, wow. And they point out that at this point in his own reelection campaign 8 years ago, former President Barack Obama, he only had $288 million in the till there. And the GOP, they're crediting the largest field program and data operation in party history for their fundraising success. And this includes an army of 1 million volunteers. And they say they are both trained and activated. That sounds like an army, doesn't it? And they've got a really strong public outreach going on, particularly online. And the campaign has also allocated $20 million to a new legal budget. And this is to combat the Democrats' assault on the integrity of our elections. So we'll have to see how that is. If you're curious, it's at a website called protectthevote.com. According to Rona McDaniel, she is chairman of the Republican National Committee, while day-to-day life may have slowed this past month, enthusiasm and support for this president has not. With their time, resources, and ultimately their vote, Americans across this country continue to put their faith in President Trump. So it's kind of a happy story for a Saturday, isn't it?
You know, throughout the campaigns, there's always that little nuisance where the members of the other party now support the presidential candidate of the opposing party, meaning that Republicans for Biden has now appeared?
Yes, Republicans for Biden has just surfaced, and this is a big effort to organize and recruit Republicans who may be for Biden or who may be anti-Trump or whatever they happen to be, and they are in search of disgruntled GOP voters who could, you know, jettison their support for the president and switch sides. And I have to make this point because their effort is kind of a little late in the game because maybe they didn't know this, but Mr. Trump's campaign launched a formal and very well-organized outreach called Democrats for Trump quite some time ago, like months ago. And, but back to our friends, the Democrats, and their current efforts to go after GOPers. And it was actually Joe Biden himself that hinted this group was existing back in April. And he did this during an Instagram chat, believe it or not. And that's how people started realizing that Republicans for Biden had been launched. And Jennifer Horn, she was a longtime Republican strategist. She told the Daily Beast, "I know that it is happening and it's coming together." And she notes that a national GOP operative approached her months ago about joining the effort. Now, if you're curious about the names here, these are some of the names that are supposed to be involved in this effort. And that would be former CEO of Hewlett-Packard, Carly Fiorina, once a presidential candidate. Competed against Trump in 2016, not so long ago. And she says she cannot vote for Donald Trump in 2020. And this is according to the Daily Beast. And some of the other names. These are all rumor names. I did not write this story. I'm just reporting it. Again, this is coming from the Daily Beast. They say that former Ohio Governor John Kasich is in on this effort, plus former Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, Bill Kristol, and former National Committee Chairman Michael Steele.
Well, no surprises in that list of names. We've been hearing anti-Trump messaging from that whole team for months, if not years.
That's your report on Republicans for Biden. Interesting, huh?
All right, so there are some disgruntled Republicans that aren't fans of Trump. How about the press? They've never been fans of Trump.
No, well, that's true. They were not fans of Trump when he was campaigning back in 2015, and it still continues. But a lot of analysts are noticing that they seem to be recycling the same "we hate Trump" story over and over again. And certainly the old stole the election narrative is still percolating away, and they always have the same repetitive material that claims that Mr. Trump is like unraveling or he's rude or he's unpresidential or unhinged, et cetera. And someone has articulated this in a beautiful way. This is from Molly Hemingway. She's a senior editor at The Federalist, always a very great publication there online. But she says, could the media please stop publishing the same Never Trump column over and over again. It is said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. In media, Never Trumpism is writing the same column over and over and expecting the orange bad man to disappear. Isn't that great writing? Anyway, she continues to say, publishing identical Never Trump columns about Trump unraveling month after month and year after year is yet another way to treat conservative Americans as second-class citizens and failing to adhere and engage with substantive agreements of tens of millions of people is also a form of election interference, albeit one engaged in by a wide variety of our media. Again, that's coming from Molly Hemingway. Really just some great writing there, but she really articulates what a lot of people are saying. It's like, what, you know, criticize Trump, rinse and repeat? Is that what we're coming to here? But it was a good writing from Miss Hemingway.
One of the neat things about having you on the show is you always are able to kind of take the pulse of how people are feeling, what's going on in people's lives. And one big thing that's going on in our lives now is when we go to the grocery store, we never know what's going to be in stock, what's not going to be in stock, and how much it's going to cost.
Yes, well, I can tell you who's going to tell you how much it's going to cost, and that's the Bureau of Labor Statistics. You want to talk about the prices going up in the grocery stores? Gee, have you started looking at that? I don't think anybody is missing the fact that a lot of prices are really skyrocketing there at the grocery stores, like trying to buy hamburgers. It was interesting. Well, conveniently, the Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Price Index is out, and here is how much the price of your favorite foods have jumped in the last month. Meat, poultry, fish, and eggs are up by 4.3%. Cereals and bakery products are up by 2.9%, as are non-alcoholic beverages. Both dairy products and fruits and vegetables have risen by 1.5%. And in general, all the food in the home, again, this is a consumer price index, has also gone up by 1.9%. And the food outside the home, I would assume that means restaurant fare, that's only gone up 0.1%. That's kind of telling. But meanwhile, the price of alcoholic beverages has gone up by only 0.3%. So you're in luck there.
That's good news, yeah.
And anyway, we can cheer up as well because the price of gas in the car has gone down by 20.4%. Car insurance has dropped by 7.2%. Airline fares are down by 15.2%. And the cost of clothes, believe it or not, are now down by 4.7%. And according to CNBC, they did a lot of the numbers and looked at the historic precedent, and they say that this is the greatest increase in grocery prices in 46 years. So there you go. Yeah, the prices are up there.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway, Washington Times. Follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Thank you very much. Have a great spring weekend.
Yes, let's all have a great spring weekend. Absolutely. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you soon.
All righty. 6:45 Saturday morning update on WMAL. We'll take a quick check of the traffic and weather, and then we'll talk with Jim Trusty, a very knowledgeable attorney, and we'll look at the Michael Flynn case and what's happening with the judge, Emmett Sullivan. And also, we'll be looking at the Tara Reid allegations against Joe Biden. That's next, but first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Virginia on northbound 95 at the Fairfax County Parkway, you'll still find some accident activity on the left shoulder, but not causing any delays. In Maryland, in College Park, Greenbelt Road in both directions between Route 1 and Rhode Island Avenue. Look for construction work and some single lane closures are possible in each direction. And in the district, do watch out for a work zone on 17th Street in both directions between I Street and K Street. Left lane closed in each direction there. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
We'll have added clouds on your Saturday. Also the chance for a couple of isolated storms south and west of D.C. High steady around 80 degrees. We had overnight cloudy skies, lows a little bit cooler in the 50s in the suburbs, near 60 degrees downtown. For your Sunday, mostly cloudy skies, a few stray showers, highs in the lower 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
69 degrees at 6:46 on WMAL. It is the Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. Good to have you with us. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty joins us. He's an attorney here in Washington at IFRA Law, and he is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice, now focusing his practice here in Washington. And, Jim, I wanted to talk to you about this decision that was made by Emmett Sullivan, the judge in the Michael Flynn case. The Justice Department announcing it would not pursue the prosecution of General Flynn, but Sullivan on Wednesday appointed a former federal judge to oppose the Justice Department's request. Now, help me out here, because I would think if I were in court and the prosecutor decided to drop the case against me, that I would be walking out.
Right. Well, look, this is a very unusual situation. I wouldn't say that it's unconstitutional at this moment, but it raises huge constitutional questions. And the first and foremost one is that when a prosecutor decides to not go forward on a case, that's usually the very end of the case. It's a very ministerial role that the judge has after that to enter the dismissal, to agree with the motion to dismiss, and to get rid of the case. That's just a basic separation of powers issue where the executive branch has the authority to charge or not to charge, and the judicial branch doesn't have a say. What we have here is obviously a really kind of unusual moment where both the prosecutors and General Flynn's attorneys are scratching their heads and saying, what's before us? What's going to happen next? And Judge Sullivan has basically decided to bring in a third party, which shows obviously he's dissatisfied with the government's approach. And he brought in a gentleman named John Gleason, a former judge, a big law partner, who basically opined, I think, 4 or 5 days ago now in an op-ed piece that not only did he personally think that there was a very bad political decision made by Attorney General Barr to withdraw this case, dismiss this case, but he also went on to say that the judge can basically deny the motion to dismiss and go forward with sentencing. And that's the part that causes, I think, objective lawyers at least, to really pause. There's no authority for that. In fact, the case law quite clearly says that it's incredibly limited circumstances where a judge could deny a motion to dismiss, and they ain't here. So you've got, of all the lawyers in the world that are qualified, that have good experience, that might even be former judges like Judge Gleason, it would be very troubling if you're General Flynn's attorney to see that's the guy that gets picked by Judge Sullivan to handle this independent role second-guessing the prosecution's decisions. So that by itself is a powder keg of constitutional issues. And then the second issue is whether the judge, as he suggested in his order, might be considering contempt for dishonesty on behalf of General Flynn.
I guess now, General Flynn, he'll be incurring more legal expense. How long might this go on?
Well, that's the big question. I mean, again, in a normal situation on a motion to dismiss, it would not be unheard of for the judge to literally, like right now, sign an order that says granted, case dismissed. So that could have been done if the judge was inclined to do that 4 or 5 days ago and this whole thing ends. Right now, the way it's shaping up, asking for amicus briefs, appointing an independent prosecutor of sorts to the matter, I think we've got a ways to go. I think we're going to have a public hearing probably late summer, maybe even into the fall, with a lot of fireworks. And I'm not convinced that the judge is ultimately going to try to pursue criminal contempt charges against General Flynn, but I am convinced that he's going to be looking for a pound of flesh out of a lot of people. He may well demand that somebody high up from the Department of Justice shows up to explain themselves. He may have a lot to say about the decision to not prosecute, but he also may have a lot to say about his take on General Flynn's conduct and General Flynn's candor with the court. So I suspect we're going to have a real media circus as opposed to just a quiet entry in the law books.
Okay, so you have the attorney general that's involved in this. He's no slacker. I mean, I would assume if he's the attorney general, he's got a pretty good sense of the law and investigations. He seems to feel that there are no grounds to pursue the case. What is he saying that seems to be so much different than the way Emmett Sullivan's viewing this?
Well, a great question, and I'm not sure how Judge Sullivan's viewing it. I mean, he's obviously telegraphing that he's got huge concerns. But let me go back to Attorney General Barr for a second. You know, there's a lot of people, a lot of armchair prosecutors that are going to be out there, that are already out there, saying that this was an outrageous decision, that he's just trying to curry favor with President Trump, et cetera, ad nauseum. But the reality is this was a completely busted case. This was a case where the FBI, the general context, was horrific in terms of Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and Andy McCabe and Jim Comey showing absolute overt political bias. But even within the case, there was violation upon violation, how they conducted the interview, how they broke the rules to escape lawyers being there for General Flynn, how they violated their discovery agreements. And all of this is in the context of a rinky-dink 1001 false statement case. I mean, keep in mind, this was not a treason case or, you know, cavorting with the enemy on some level. It's a rinky-dink, run-of-the-mill false statement case plagued with misconduct. So I think Attorney General Barr looks at it and he says, enough's enough. Why would we want to defend a case where the FBI broke all the rules in their quest to get a Trump ally? Why would we waste our time on a 1001 case that has this much misconduct associated with it? And I think he made the right call. There's legal issues, but really it's just death by a thousand cuts based on the behavior of a small group of people at the FBI.
You know, I mentioned legal fees a couple of minutes ago. Does he have any recourse when it's the federal government?
He does have some recourse that I'm sure he's going to explore with his attorney, and it's basically the Hyde Amendment. There's a law that was passed by Henry Hyde when he was in Congress many years ago that opened up the possibility of defendants prosecuting the federal government, specifically the prosecutors and investigators, when they bring a case in bad faith. And so that's a pretty interesting situation here, and I think it's one that General Flynn's attorney is almost undoubtedly going to look into and possibly pursue.
I want to turn to the allegations from Tara Reid against Joe Biden. He said in an interview this week, to paraphrase, that if you believe Tara Reid, maybe you shouldn't vote for me. You have prosecuted sex assault cases in the past. What are the things that you look for as a prosecutor when you have an allegation?
Well, there's a number of things. And look, the starting point is sexual assault cases usually don't happen in crowded subway stations, right? I mean, it's typically not something that has independent witnesses to the actual event. So to build a case that involves a sexual assault, you look for a variety of potential things. One is obviously physical evidence. Monica Lewinsky's blue dress comes to mind, but also just physical trauma, you know, examinations by medical professionals that can corroborate that there was a forcible assault, if that's the type of case it is. You also look for something called a fresh complaint, and that basically means the victim immediately reports what happened to somebody else, a loved one, a family member, a friend, or a police officer, whoever it may be, that they talked about it when it happened as opposed to keeping silence for decades. And then obviously if you have an admission of some sort by the defendant, by the target of the investigation, that can be important. But it could also be a false exculpatory, they call it, where the defendant says, oh, no, I couldn't have done it because I was at the movie that night, and it turns out there was no movie that night. So you look for things that tend to tip the scales on the credibility. And, of course, in some instances, you're looking to just corroborate this victim through other victims. And that's kind of like the Bill Cosby situation, where you hear about an MO, a modus operandi, where that person keeps doing the same types of things to his victims. The delayed reporting is the big complication in any of these cases, though, because that creates the possibility of inconsistent statements or consistent statements. It starts to open up questions about motives to fabricate. Why would this person say this now? And it probably eliminates, in most instances, the ability to do what law enforcement would love to do, which is a phone sting, where the victim confronts the defendant, even if it's been a year or two, and says, you know, I'm still mad about what you did, to try to get admissions out of the person. So that's kind of the quick version of the toolbox that prosecutors would look at when they investigate a sexual assault case, whether it's a new one or a delayed reporting one.
A very interesting twist here is the phone call that Tara Reid's mother made to the Larry King Show in 1996, where she talks about an alleged assault on her daughter who worked on Capitol Hill. How does that enter into it when you're looking at this from a legal standpoint?
Well, it's at least a tidbit of corroboration, but it's hard to know. You know, I talked about fresh complaints. They have to be fresh. In other words, telling somebody 5 years later, 10 years later, doesn't have a whole lot of legal import. But if they told somebody right after it happened, and it sounds like Tara might have told her mom, and the call to Larry King might essentially corroborate that the mom knew about this soon after it happened, that could be important. There was also apparently a divorce pleading by Tara's husband where he referred to her being a victim of a sexual assault while she worked on the Hill, if I got that right. So there's some interesting corroboration, but it's not powerful unless it's really fresh to the time of the incident, and that's what we don't know from just those two either phone calls or pieces of paper.
We saw the outrage and the uproar during the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, and he was to become a Supreme Court justice. Here is someone who could become the President of the United States, and I don't think we're seeing a similar outrage or uproar over it. Where do you see kind of the politics of this and the Me Too movement where it comes to a Democrat versus a Republican?
Well, it certainly looks like they're taking a different approach to credibility than they would if, say, Justice Kavanaugh was the one that was on the hook. But, you know, here's the problem I have with the Me Too movement. This is just coming from, I guess, a sense of being a lawyer and maybe a sense of fair play. Anybody that announces we should always believe the women, or we should never believe the men, or vice versa. We should always believe the men. Maybe that's what it was many decades ago. You know, that's a bad sign. We should look at these cases individually. We should be consistent. We should have a middle ground, which is take it case by case and don't create different standards because we hate Donald Trump or Brett Kavanaugh or Joe Biden, but just go with actual evidence. And so if the Me Too movement is taking a beating by its inconsistent approach here, that's fine with me as long as it modifies it down to something that's more just. And again, I think supporting actual victims, making sure there's not stigmatized feelings for victims where they won't come forward about horrible sexual offenses. I mean, we want to get rid of that problem of non-reporting, but we don't want to just knee-jerk assume everybody that comes forward is being truthful.
Jim Trusty, IFRA Law here in Washington, D.C. Jim, thanks very much for your perspectives.
Always great to be with you, Rick. Thanks.
You bet. 6:58, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. We've got 7 o'clock news next. Then we're back with John Gizzi, Cheryl Eckeson, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland.
The saying, having a roof over your head, signifies the shelter and safety it provides your family. Hi, it's Chris Plant, and lately we've all been spending much more time in the safety of our own homes. My friend Kyle Hoffman and his team at Roofing & More understand the public concern regarding face-to-face contact and on-site visits, so they've created an online process for your family's protection. Roofing & More is now offering virtual appointments, so you can have your home's roof replaced with total peace of mind. More homes in the U.S. are protected by a GAF roof than any other product, and Roofing & More's Master Elite certification as a GAF contractor means you'll be working with the best. So call Roofing & More at 703-467-0206 or visit roofingandmoreinc.com to schedule your virtual appointment today. When you expect more, you get more. Roofing & More.
Roofing & More, what's the more for? Window, siding, gutters, and doors.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.